The following monastic ordination for Geoffrey Kean Martin took place at Zen Mountain Monastery on Sunday, January 22, 2023. The ceremony was officiated by Abbot Geoffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi.
Good morning, everyone. So this morning we are doing an ordination, Shuke Tokudo, in the our Japanese lineage. Shuge means home leaving, and Tokudo is the ordination ceremony. And so this morning is a living link in something that has been happening in every generation, beginning with the Buddha and his home leaving, as he set out to take up the most crucial matters of human life, and from a spiritual perspective. And after his enlightenment, began teaching and receiving the requests from those who wanted to walk this path as a home laborer, as someone who dedicated their whole life to the Dharma, to living the way, in every action, in every thought, in every word spoken. In the world, we all decide those things that are important to us, that we dedicate our energies to, family, careers, things of particular interest that we feel are most important. I've always been so grateful that there are students in the Sangha who are parents and teachers and people building houses and running businesses and doctoring and lawyering and all the things that I'm not doing, that the monastics here are not doing, because those things need to be done, and they need to be done by people who are awake, who care deeply, and who understand the implications of that. And there also needs to be people, I believe, who in every generation recognize those important turnings of our world and feel called to a different kind of life, to a different kind of imperative, as Dada Roshi used to speak of it. That is a profound inward turning, a kind of revolutionizing of the interior. But following are the profound teachings of Prajnaparamita, that that inward turning is inward turning without creating any wall or boundary between inside and outside, between one and another. And so that there be ways for people to dedicate their lives, the whole of their lives, to just that, this Buddha Dharma. And so today is such a day of celebration, of recognizing another practitioner, another bodhisattva, another Buddha, who after long years of practice and discernment is now entering, passing through this threshold. Kean has been practicing here and also in the city for many years. Became a student in the late 90s, and then went on to receive Jikai, the Bodhisattva precepts, which he'll receive again today, and then a postulant and novitiate. And in each of those steps, clarifying, discerning, questioning, being challenged by the life that he was living, which was the life that he said he felt he wanted to live as a monastic, with the taking of these vows within this community at this time. The Japanese word for monastic is unsui, which means clouds and water. Never landing, never abiding, never dwelling in any place in accord with the teachings. Having the capacity to bring nourishment and shade when needed. So Kian begins with a series of bows. This first set of bows is to the Buddha, our original teacher. And these bows are a recognition of how utterly dependent we are on others, past and present, in order to take every single breath, to wake up to every single day, to have come to the Dharma, to have come into this life. And so the second series of vows is to his parents, who gave him this precious gift of life, and who are most wonderfully here today. And then the last set of series of vows to his ordination teacher, who in this case is myself. Because without these three streams, this would not be possible. And so I forgot to welcome you, family, parents, friends, who have come today. It's so important that you're here. Thank you. This life that you are choosing today can only be entered freely, with eyes open, after careful discernment and inquiry, based on a deep and mutual affinity, a subtle communication. It is your rightful place into the path of awakening as a monastic. Are you choosing this life freely?
Yes, I am.
So we'll begin with an invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, to invoke and bring into our conscious presence those three essential jewels which make, allow what we do to be Buddha Dharma. So I'll do this three times. Everyone please gassho. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions, be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions, be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions, be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Samantabhadra, Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Manjushri, Bodhisattva, be one with Koso Joyodaishi, be one with Taiso Joyodaishi, be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions, be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions, be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions, be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Samantabhadra, Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Manjushri, Bodhisattva, be one with Koso Joyodaishi, be one with Taiso Joyodaishi, be one with the successive great ancestors. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great wise, compassionate Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise, Samantabhadra, Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise, Manjushri, Bodhisattva, be one with Koso Joyodaishi, be one with Taiso Josaidaishi, be one with the successive great ancestors. Beginning with the Buddha, there's been the practice and the tradition of shaving the head as a physical, embodied way of releasing all attachments. And because, like attachments, the hair grows back, we have to shave again and again. And so it is an ongoing practice of releasing those attachments is embodied and sort of expressed through our visual appearance, through the hair. And so the ordained monastics will chant the verse on shaving the head.
In the drifting, wandering world, it is very difficult to cut off our human ties. Now we cast them away and enter true activity. It is in this way that we express our gratitude. As we shave our heads, we renew our vows to live a life of simplicity, service, stability, selflessness, and to accomplish the Buddha's way. May we manifest our lives with wisdom and compassion and actualize the Tathagata's true teaching. In the drifting, wandering world, it is very difficult to cut off our human ties. Now we cast them away and enter true activity. It is in this way that we express our gratitude. As we shave our heads, we renew our vows to live a life of simplicity, service, stability, selflessness, and to accomplish the Buddha's way. May we manifest our lives with wisdom and compassion and actualize the Tathagata's true teaching. In the drifting, wandering world, it is very difficult to cut off our human ties. Now we cast them away and enter true activity. It is in this way that we express our gratitude. As we shave our heads, we renew our vows to live a life of simplicity, service, stability, selflessness, and to accomplish the Buddha's way. May we manifest our lives with wisdom and compassion and actualize the Tathagata's true teaching.
Only Buddhas can ordain a Buddha. Do I have your permission to remove your hair?
You have my permission.
This lock gets buried, offered to the life outside. The monastic lives a life of simplicity, except when it comes to their clothing. Just one bell. And now we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. That in this life we accumulate the consequences of the karma, the actions that we create that arise out of negative thoughts and emotions, oftentimes influenced by our experiences earlier in our life. But they become our responsibility when they are our thoughts, our words, our actions. And so to enter into this life, this day, unburdened, we'll do the Gatha of Atonement, which is a way of acknowledging the negative karma that we've created here, all-encompassing, is spoken of as evil, which is recognizing through our lives, countless lives, if we've had more than one, we no doubt have caused all kinds of harmful actions. And by virtue of the fact that you're here, it is also inarguable that you have brought about many very positive and good actions that have brought you to this place. So we'll repeat this three times and call an echo with the Sangha, so everyone's invited to take this Gatha of Atonement. Everyone, please, Gassho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. My body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. My body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. Next is a water ritual, which is present in almost every tradition. The mountain water in a pine bough. An expression of the enlightened mind that we each possess and that is at the same time transmitted in every generation. And now we will take refuge in the three treasures, which is beginning to receive the Bodhisattva precepts, which traditionally has been in our tradition, ordination, the Bodhisattva precepts. Dada Roshi also included the five monastic precepts. You have already received these Bodhisattva precepts, but you will receive them again today. So we'll I'll chant this three times. The second time through, we'll do it together, call an echo. Everyone, please, gosho. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one. I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony. I have taken refuge in the Buddha. I have taken refuge in the Dharma. I have taken refuge in the Sangha. If we are sincere, we can spend the whole of our lives understanding just this. So now, the continuing to receive the precepts, the three pure precepts, which essentially, in a very simple and direct way, describe the life of the Buddha, of an enlightened being, of an enlightening being, and simply how to be in this world, based in our actual nature, based in the nature of all things. The first of the pure precepts is to not create evil, to not bring harm, anything hurtful, destructive, denying of life into this world. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this?
I vow to not create evil.
The second pure precept is to practice good. Practicing good needs to be brought into the world in the same way that evil doesn't just exist, but arises through the human mind and actions, so too good. Even though we have a natural impulse, an innate impulse towards good, that can become obscured and turned upside down. So to practice good in every thought, word, and action, to bring forth the virtues that we all possess. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambuddhi. This is the way of all beings. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And to actualize good for others, to ensure that the good that we're bringing into the world is made actual in the experience and lives of other people, that the life of the Bodhisattva is to serve, is to have a positive influence. Although we ourselves, in a way, are very insignificant on this earth for a very fleeting moment of time, we do have influence. And that is not optional. So then the question is, what is our influence? This is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy, to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
There's a teaching that says, while a child could understand those words, even a wise old person will at times have difficulty following them. The 10 great precepts point to the ways that we most significantly cause harm in this world, create negative karma, bind, destroy. And at the same time, when the self, when self-clinging, when greed, anger, delusion is liberated, then they all have an affirmative side of how to give life, of how to practice good and actualize good for others. The first of the great precepts is to affirm life, to not kill, to be in this life as an embodiment of affirming all that is alive. Life is non-killing, Master Dogen says. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha. Maintain this wisdom life and do not kill life. Affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life and not kill.
To be giving and not steal. To be aware of the impulse in all the many ways that we want to take, to take, to take. Here, this is specifically to take what does not belong to us, what is ours, not ours to take. And it also is the hot mind that harbors stealing, that harbors wanting and taking. And so rather to be giving. Dogen says, the mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving and to not steal.
The third precept is to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality. Recognizing that we all are sexual beings. Every living thing is a sexual being. Through our thoughts, words, and actions, through our intentions and desires, we can be at the mercy of these forces, or we can turn them, use them to bring us together, to communicate love and contact, whether we're sexual or not. Sexually active, that is. And so this is to honor the body, the whole person. That each living thing is a whole living thing, not to be reduced to any action or aspect, not to be objectified in any way. The three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean from the beginning. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. We maintain this.
I vow to honor the body and not misuse sexuality.
Manifest truth, do not lie. To be straightforward, simple, really, straightforward in our lives from the inside out, and to manifest truth. Not that it sits on the surface, but to manifest, to have it run through us. This is such an important precept for a person of the way. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns, and there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth and not lie.
Proceed clearly, do not cloud the mind. There are so many ways we can do just that. And that when the mind becomes cloudy, clouding it further gets easier. The further away we get from the natural, luminous, radiant clarity of mind, the easier it is to get further away from it. But when we begin to taste it, to touch it, to make contact, then we realize that there is nothing brighter than this. The mind is the originally pure and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly and not cloud the mind.
See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Discriminating consciousness divides the world into all kinds of dualities, which then stand opposed, against. And the self is at the center of every discriminating thought, every action of building a wall, and investing it with the power to divide. To see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults, is to recognize that we are on a path of unfolding, that sometimes we make errors and mistakes that have impact. But that does not dim the mind. It does not cloud the mind. It does not in one way or in any way obscure our original nature. This is really about how to be fundamentally compassionate. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. We maintain this.
I vow to see the perfection and to not speak of others' errors and faults.
Realize self and others as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. In a similar but somewhat different way, another way that discriminating consciousness elevates and diminishes, disregards, disrespects, includes and excludes all the source of all of the ways we bring harm to one another, all based on deceptions, deceptions in our mind, deceptions we project onto others. Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's neither outside nor inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not a single inch of earth upon which to stand. Realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and other as one and not elevate the self and blame others.
I would say these are medicine for our day, Buddhist or non-Buddhist. Give generously to not be withholding. There is taking what does not belong with us. There is not giving what we have to give that would serve, that would heal, that would bring us together. And so to not be withholding with the Dharma, with anything that we might have to offer. There are teachings that in the Bodhisattva path, we should not tire easily. We should not tire easily. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. Just a few of what we have to give. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Give generously. Do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously and not be withholding.
To actualize harmony, to not be angry. We have so much powerful force within us, streams of energy and influence, that in samsara are just simply misused. Entanglements, bound. Anger is one of the great entanglements. While it can serve to heal, can serve to bring forth compassion, it is all too easy for it to be like a runaway fire. And so to be very alert to all the many forms of anger, of denial, of aversion, and to learn how to practice them skillfully, compassionately. It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There is an ornamented cloud ocean. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony and not be angry.
Dogen's words, he's affirming the existence of anger. It must not be denied, but he's also affirming that is nothing other than mind. And the last of the great precepts, to experience the intimacy of things, do not defile the three treasures. Making your life the three treasures themselves, your whole life a taking refuge in the three treasures. This precept is saying, do not defile the three treasures. Expounding the Dharma with the body and mind is the essential matter. All virtues return to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on them, just practice them. Serve them well. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things and not defile the three treasures.
Could you get him a tissue? And now the monastic vows. So years ago, as Dada Roshi was, with some help, was building this place of Dharma, this mountain, and a monastic order, a monastery, he felt it important. Thank you. He felt it important to, essential really, to establish monastic vows that really point very directly and essentially at what the monastic life is, so that the monastic can study and engage and practice those and let them develop over their lifetime, let them reveal as you engage them their depth and breadth, and how they are your friends, your companions on this path, that they allow you to actually live this life in a way that stays in accord with your intention, with your aspiration, with the Dharma itself, with the Sangha. And in a way, monasteries have always been a kind of radical alternative to a mainstream way of life. That there is much in ordinary life that is beautiful and wonderful and nourishing. And there are also views and beliefs and systems and influences and forces that are not so. And so this is about reclaiming your natural mind and making a clear discernment and decision about how you want to be in this world. Dada Roshi used to say in the early years, when things were a little more precarious, that if we were to lose this place, that the monks would just find somewhere else to practice. That it isn't dependent upon a place, a hall, a mountain. These are vows that we take, that we live, whatever circumstances, whatever conditions we find ourselves in. So the first of the monastic vows is the vow of simplicity. So very directly it is to not accumulate wealth. If you were to come into wealth, you would release that of your own choosing. But to not accumulate wealth, which puts us into a dependent relationship on the Sangha, right? That we serve each other on the lay Sangha. And also that it allows our lives to be simple in a material way, right? That our minds and our energies are not about accumulating and preserving wealth, right? Which can do great good, but we have other ways of doing good. It's also to conduct oneself humbly and without contrivance, to actually trust simplicity, to trust simplicity, which can allow us to come into a deep, intimate relationship with things because they are allowed to be in their original state, in the natural state, which is always a state of simplicity. Not simplistic, because each and everything is a world, a universe unto itself, has complexity, but is allowed to be unadorned, uncontrived. And so to carry this vow into your relationships with people, with your robes, with the things that you possess, with objects, with circumstances, and to let it show you, to let it show you and guide you. The vow of simplicity is the heart of the monastic life. How will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of simplicity.
This vow also brings the monastics into a communal relationship. Something that many of you may not know is some years ago, the board suggested that the monastics have an increase in their stipend, sort of to go along with inflation. And so I brought that to the monastics, and we had a discussion about it, which I found very interesting and heartening. And they spoke amongst themselves about how important this vow was to them, to each of them, and that rather than have an increase in the monthly stipend, that we would have basically a common jar in which we would put monies that we might have been given by family or friends that we felt like we didn't need all of it, or honorariums, and we put it into a communal jar, which then the monastics pull from as they need to pay for things that stipends might not. And the monastics are also supported by the monastery in terms of all of their essential needs, health insurance and so on. The second vow is the vow of stability. This is to live this life is a committed life, is an intentional life, and that through all of the fluctuations, internally, externally, you know, sometimes the monastic council might ask a person who is asking to enter the monastic life, what do you think you're saying yes to? Because oftentimes a monastic thinks it's my life as it is now, under these circumstances, these conditions. And what's being communicated is no, it's a commitment to this life, whatever form it takes. It's the life itself that is important. The conditions are just the conditions in which we practice, which may change in small ways, in large ways. And so this is that vow of stability, stability within a ever-changing world. And so it requires also that one's primary decisions about family and work and travel and the things that we, you know, tend to put our energies into have been considered so that you are renouncing, which is a very important part of the monastic life, a life of family, children, that is, of having wealth, of traveling wherever you might want to go, of the things that every ordinary person, you know, does and brings them enrichment and satisfaction. And so the stability has that sort of implication in terms of being stable within this life. And also with regards to all of your inner world, that the kleshas, the afflictive emotions, all of those things that can create agitation, instability, upheaval, turbulence, that as they might occur still, arise and fall, that you practice them within this vow of stability. You practice them well, right? But you practice them within this vow of stability. And so that all of that energy that you might pour into a family or all the other concerns you might have as a layperson are all being gathered together to bring into your life every day. For your work, the people you're in community with, the people you will never meet. The vow of stability is the heart of the monastic life. How will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of stability.
The third vow is the vow of service, to be of service. Right? Dada Roshi used to often make very clear that it is not a vow of obedience, but a vow of service, to give freely, generously, and thus the teaching to not tire easily. Service to your teacher, to the teachers, to your monastic siblings, to the Sangha, to the larger Sangha, to the still larger Sangha, to living things, to inanimate things, to all of life, to all of this earth. And to practice this vow of service, what's very important is that you not accumulate things that would obstruct and impede or hinder, not accumulate grievances, annoyances, grudges, that would limit your ability to be of service, particularly with those that you might find difficult. To be of service is a true vow. It's a real vow. It means when we realize that something is in between our ability, ourselves and our ability to serve, that becomes our responsibility. And that we should do everything we can to remove that obstruction, to untangle that energy, to be willing to take that initiative. This vow is really just very simple. It is just to serve freely, generously, without recognition or reward. Giving is just giving. Serving is just serving. To be enthusiastic about life, about people, about situations within conflicts, to want to know to resolve them, to want to work them free, because you know they can be, because nothing is fixed. The vow of service is the heart of the monastic life. How will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of service.
That's why the vow of simplicity and stability is so important. There's nothing else calling on us but this. The vow of selflessness, to live your life each day in every thought, word, and action, in every relationship, in your work, in your meditation, in your liturgy, selflessly. To be free of attachment to the self, to be free of delusion about the self, and to plumb ever deeper into its true nature, your true nature, empty of any inherent characteristic, attribute, position, place. It is free and unbound, always. And that's why to realize selflessness, we have to study the self, as Dogen said. We have to be compassionate when that self arises and when the selves of others arise. So that all things that you see are dharmas. Dharmas to be liberated from the selves that have been projected upon them. And because ours is a practice tradition, the practice of selflessness is every day. That is the life that you are entering into. Every vow finds its source and inspiration in this vow. This vow, selflessness, is Buddha Dharma. Practice it, realize it, and actualize it. The vow of selflessness is the heart of the monastic life. How will you maintain this?
I vow to live a life of selflessness.
And the last vow is the vow to live in the Buddha's way. Removed as we are in time and culture and geography from the life of the Buddha, but building a life, creating a life that is very, very intimately in contact with the Buddha. In intimate contact with the Buddha, the historical Buddha, the Buddha Shakyamuni. And then all of the Buddhas coming down and having established this path, this mendicant path, this home leaver's path, to cultivate a very close and intimate relationship with the Buddha's way, living as we do in a very different time and place. Human suffering, greed, anger, confusion remain pretty much the same, it seems. Buddha nature never changes, is eternal, unborn and undying. That means in every time, it appears in this form the same, with the same potential, the same possibility for liberation. The vow of the monastic is to have profound respect and reverence for the Buddha Dharma, for the wisdom traditions of Buddhism, not in attachment, not as an institution that needs to be protected, but the living thing, Buddha Dharma, which monasteries and institutions are vessels for, and need to get that very clear, that that is what their purpose is, to be vessels for the Buddha Dharma. It's the Buddha Dharma that we are practicing. This is a living tradition in a ceaseless dynamic between maintaining that light of that wisdom and evolving within an ever-changing world and meeting the imperatives of our time. And so this vow takes place, first and foremost, in your everyday practice, to study and reflect on the example of the Buddha and to receive that example as teachings from him to you. To live the Buddha's way is the heart of the monastic life. How will you maintain this?
I vow to live the Buddha's way.
These 16 precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 great precepts, and the monastic vows have been handed down, the precepts generation after generation from Shakyamuni Buddha to me, and I now give them to you. The monastic vows given to me by my teacher, Dada Roshi, and now I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
If we are going to do this, then we should do this. Everyone, please, Gassho. When sentient beings receive the Shila, they enter the realms of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Shila, they enter the realms of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Shila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. No, that's okay. The Buddha's robe. Is a robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. I wear the Tathagata's teaching. Sentient beings, vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. I wear the Tathagata. Sentient being, that is the robe of liberation, a formless field of In the beginning, it's a wild thing. This has been practiced many times, but in the heat of the moment. Raksu. The Buddha's bowl. The ancestors. Mountain Monastery in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Jeffrey Martin, having fulfilled the monastic training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 23rd day of January, 2023, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the monastic life vows, the full monastic ordination, raksu, linyashart, robe, bowl, and the Dharma name, Jogo Kien. So now the Jishu will lead Jogo Kien around the Zendo in a walking bow, which gives everybody the opportunity to welcome him into the monastic community and to congratulate him for taking these vows. In reflecting on this ordination today, I was really feeling the weight, the importance of this life, this precious life, but also this life, the life of a monastic. There are days in my life that I've thought, why would anyone want to do this? And there have been days when I thought, why doesn't everybody want to do this? And how important it is for this monastic community that we have each other to share this solitary life that is in ways so much, so profoundly solitary, because we can only know our own experience. And to be able to share in this life together so that there is a kind of knowing of the life that we're walking together. And the ups and downs, the trials and challenges, the endless sources of joy and happiness and fulfillment. And the role that it plays within this Sangha. How the lay and the monastic profoundly need each other. We could not be here but for each other. And that each in our own way, we are fulfilling an essential role, both in the life of this community, but also in the living Dharma that has come down to us, and to make whatever might be possible in the future for seekers of the way to be possible. It has always been this way. And to feel all of that, to reflect on all of that within this time in our lives, in our country, in our world, on our earth. Where at times it seems just essential, basic courtesies and values are forgotten. And the things that seem to be important, that can so easily be made important, are not. And the things that are important, vitally important, are forgotten. There must be people, small though we are, who remember. And I don't mean just us here or Buddhists, I mean anyone, anywhere. Everywhere, who understands what is important and lives that. And so if you're feeling a little weightiness from me, that's what it is. Your name, Kien, was given to you by our teacher, Dadaroshi. Key is to shine, to be radiant, like the sun, like the moon, in all directions, brilliant. And N is circle, the symbol of enlightenment, of wholeness, of completeness, a radiant circle of wisdom, of enlightenment, of wholeness. The way is perfect like vast space, with no excess and no lack. And this circle has no edges. It's a circle like the horizon, like the sky, Kien. Jogo, your ordination name. Jo means steady, persistent, persevering. Even the smallest stream knows how to find its way to the ocean. Through all the fluctuations, the changes on dark nights, in the midst of bright sunlight, to know your path and your practice. Jo is to always know you can take another breath, you can take another step, you can always return, you can always renew, always. There may be an entering today, but there is no end to this. And that is the source of the greatest source of practice and liberation and joy. Because no matter how great the challenges, and we have many, and when we begin to undo those challenges, whether they're internal, whether they're externalized, whether they're systemic, as we know through our Beyond Fear of Differences work, undoing racism, undoing our inheritance of patriarchy. There will be pain when we disrupt. There will be pain. There will be anger, which means we, in our commitment to our vows, have to become adept at pain. Not in a noble, sanctified, ascetic sense, but in the sense that we know, as human beings, having a human body, how to experience difficult things. But we don't always know how to do that with compassion, with loving kindness, and to hold ourselves to that. Jo is that steadiness, that persistence, that persevering. Go is strength, power, splendor. It's spiritual strength that can manifest in your body, in your emotions, in your thoughts, as an aspiration, in your work, in your zazen. It is a real thing. It is a living thing. We might say that all of practice is introducing us to go, which we realize through Jo. As human beings having enlightened nature, you possess a natural, uncontrived, ever-present, miraculous awareness, mind. You also have been given the wheels of thought and speech and actions like the powers of a god. And to bring forth a desire and name it as an aspiration, and then to live that, is the most powerful thing in the human realm. That is your spiritual strength, your power, your splendor. Our delusions can seem to dampen or dim that radiant light, but it is never dimmed, ever. That's what we come to see. Not in us and not in anyone else. And so on this day, in this life, in the presence of your family and your Sangha, you have taken these vows, and in a very real sense, we have taken them with you. And so we have a responsibility to each other to live these vows well and deeply. That is the selfless love of the Bodhisattva. This is the source of all compassion and wisdom, and to know how they need each other, wisdom and compassion. So may you be deeply, unimaginably fulfilled beyond your ability to imagine in this life. I know it is possible. May you fulfill, spend all the time of your life fulfilling that, and let everyone know that too. Let everyone see that. In that way, we all benefit. May your life go well.
Sentient beings are numberless. I bow to save them. Desires are inexhaustible. I bow to put an end. Time.
So congratulations. And thank you again, family and friends, near and far, who are here today to witness and celebrate this all together. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.